It's time to drill down deep on the stories of the day. Welcome to Afternoons with Danielle Smith on News Talk 770. The conversation starts now.
Welcome back to Afternoons on News Talk 770. Well, I'm going to read some of the feedback that came in because I'm gathering. Now, if there were any positive comments, I would read them, but there don't appear to be that many positive comments. But look, I want to switch gears and talk about think tanks for a minute, because I like to go to think tanks because they do an awful lot of independent research. The thing about think tanks in this country, and I think it's probably the case elsewhere as well, my next guest will be able to help me out with that, is that think tanks do take an ideological position on the thing that they're advocating for, or the policies they're advocating for, and the ideas they're advocating for. The interesting thing about the way we're structured in Canada is that our think tanks, as long as they do not do direct advocacy and lobbying of government, they're allowed to have charitable status. So it caught my producer's attention, this posting that is making the rounds on Facebook. It began in 2013, but it's now sort of re-emerged and making the rounds. And I do see this from time to time. And as you know, I was an intern at the Fraser Institute, so I'm always very interested in what the opponents of the organization have to say about it. So we've got this comment from an S. Hume at Mediated Justice, saying the Fraser Institute is a registered charitable organization, which means that under federal tax rules, it's exempt from paying tax on its income and can issue tax receipts for the gifts that it receives, which means that its donors get a tax reduction too. And it goes on and it talks about where it gets its money from, the fact, the number of full-time employees that they have. And this comment here, 20% of its full-time staff members earn salaries that put them in the top 10% of all Canadian income earners. About 10% earn incomes in the top 1%. So here we have a charitable organization, which is exempt from paying taxes on their revenue, paying themselves generous salary scales while giving each other tax-exempt gifts so they can produce reports complaining that too many single moms and minimum wage dads don't pay sufficient taxes and are a threat to our democratic way of life. Now, it won't surprise you that along the feed and comments, people expressing outrage that the Fraser Institute has charitable status. Many, and this has happened in the past, arguing that Fraser Institute and other think tanks shouldn't have charitable status. Although I would point out, it does seem to me that the very groups that would criticize Fraser Institute would probably be upset if anyone was to say, oh, well, then maybe we should pull the charity tax, the charitable status of the Parkland Institute, or the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, or the Pembina Institute. It seems to me that if we're going to have vibrant discussion, we need ideas generators who are going to put the ideas out there. And this stuff doesn't happen for free. So you already know my bias that I tell you right up front. I am for maintaining charitable status, and I am for being as broad-minded in how we interpret that as we can so that we can have think tanks on the left and the right that are both supported. I'm not interested in only having the think tanks I support and am ideologically aligned with maintain the status and pulling it from others, as it seems the hypocrisy that I see in other organizations and individuals posting on this. But we're going to have a conversation about think tanks, and we're going to do that with my next guest, who has made this an area of expertise. Jeremy Hexham is a PhD candidate in the Department of Communications, Film, and Media at the University, specializing in political communications. Jeremy, thanks so much for being with me.
Thanks for having me, Danielle. And let me just state, you know, you talked about three left-wing think tanks. I think the matter goes a lot more serious. If we ban the Parkland Institute, the Fraser Institute, where do we stop? Do we then stop giving funding to universities, student associations? Do we stop giving it? Do we start banning the Canadian Cancer Society, because they do some advocacy work? Where does it stop? And so I think that's one thing we have to look at with the think tanks. With regards to this post that's going around about Facebook, I just want to make a couple of comments. Yeah. First of all, it comes from an article written by Stephen Hume in April of 2013 for the Vancouver Sun, and he's taking information from Stats Canada, from Revenue Canada, and I've looked at the numbers, and I understand where he's getting it from. And there's a thing on there that says that, you know, total compensation was $5.6 million. Yet, according to the expenses, they only spent $900,000, so less than $1 million. So something doesn't add up. So I think that we're attacking think tanks without fully understanding the entire issue and doing the proper research. And, you know, if we want to talk about think tanks and advocacy, let's get them to be more open. Let's get them to disclose everything like they have to do in Germany and England.
Well, we'll talk about what happens in Germany and England, but I think what trips up a lot of people is what it is Canada Revenue Agency considers a legitimate cause to give somebody charitable status. Now, I had this in front of me, and let me see if I can find it here. It says that they will give you charity status if you are an organization that takes work to relieve the poor, that advances religions, so that's why churches have it, that has purposes that benefit the community. That's a pretty broad range. And then the fourth one is advancing education. So advancing education is seen to be a legitimate charitable purpose.
And they also say you can only spend 10% of your money on advocacy. But where's the difference between advocacy and education? They could be very close together. You know, if you're a former politician, you must have had people coming into your office sort of trying to educate you on an issue where, in fact, they may have been advocating for you.
Let me tell you the difference, because when I have Fraser Institute on here or Pembina Institute, and I'll use those both because I had them both last week, part of their role in coming on here to share their studies and what they think should change in policy is an advocacy role. But there's a big difference in doing that as through the media, because then you're trying to educate a broad group of people and trying to get them to be advocates on your behalf. I can tell you, the Fraser Institute, and I believe the Fraser Institute would never come in and meet as a group with politicians. That's where it crosses the line into lobbying. And I think that's really the gray area in Canada, is that it's almost impossible. What's the point in doing a study to put it on a shelf and never do a media interview, never conduct student seminars, never have events, and never let people know anything about it? But there is quite a bit of difference. If, for instance, the Fraser Institute had signed that letter today to the premier saying don't take any other policy measures that will hurt business, that might have been crossing the line because it was directly trying to lobby the government. But in this role of advocacy, the way they do it, that just seems to me to be an extension of the public education role.
Yeah, and this is the problem with that 10% rule of where it goes through. And I'm not just thinking about the Fraser Institute. I'm thinking of nonprofits in general when they've come through and tried to, you know, talk to the politicians that we need to advocate more funding for something or you better education. That line is so difficult. And that's where the Canadian Revenue Agency says, well, are you advocating or are you educating? And there is that fine line in this country that you don't have in other countries.
Well, let me ask you this, because I think that the left always felt that they got picked on under the previous government, because Greenpeace was one of the organizations that ended up getting its charity status pulled. But I'm hard-pressed to think of any research that is academic, that is peer-reviewed, that Greenpeace has ever done. They seem to me to be entirely advocacy and virtually nothing on the education front. Is that part of it? Is that they didn't get the right balance in how they were putting their ideas out there? Would that be part of the reason why they had their charity status pulled?
I would assume so. I mean, I don't know that case specifically, but I just know that's one of the reasons they pull it, is how far are you going? And it is difficult, because there are organizations that have done some fantastic work that should be getting charitable status that don't, and then you take it away. And the rules are really weird for nonprofits. Now, when you get into think tanks, it's a completely different message of what you're doing. Again, as I said, what is the difference between advocacy and education? And somebody could say, well, the Fraser Institute's just advocating. They're having student seminars to advocate these policies. Well, the Parkland, we're educating people to learn the truth about what's going on. And let's attack the Fraser Institute. I also think it's scary and dangerous how conservative or right-wing think tanks in this country get attacked by the left without actually doing the history of think tanks, because the Fraser Institute and the Parkland, they all come out of a model that was introduced in 1886 by the Fabian Society from England. Now, the Fabian Society is probably the most successful think tank around. They founded the London School of Economics. They helped found the Labour Party. They helped found the New Statesman. Oh, yeah, by the way, should we mention that J.S. Woodworth, the founder and leader of the CCF, and some guy called Tommy Douglas were also members of the Fabians and were very influenced by the Fabian ideas?
Well, this is so interesting, because because what you're saying is that you've got an organization that's a think tank, but it had different arms. And some of the arms went decidedly political, but then others went down the route of research. I guess this is the thing. I'm not sure that if Canadians or Albertans specifically accept that education should be a grounds to get charity status. I think that's part of the stumbling block that people have. I think they think that you should only be doing something that helps the poor or helps the vulnerable to be able to get that charity status. And so do we have to make a case for why it is education should be a grounds to be able to get your organization charitable status?
I think we should do it for everything. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. I mean, in England, they have laws that go back to the 11th century on charitable status. And you think things get confusing now. And they're constantly trying to change them and figure out what qualifies charitable status and what doesn't. And, you know, there's always fights going on. And right now in England, you can spend whatever money you want on advocacy. Well, the government has come out with a rule saying, well, yeah, but if you get money from the government, you can't do it. And people are fighting it because they're saying, well, wait a sec, we can go back to the, you know, 10th century, 11th century, whatever, and this is what we're allowed to do. So it depends how you look at it. And yes, education should get charitable status. But then we're sort of saying, do all student unions, should student union organizations get charitable status as well?
Before you leave to go on to student unions, because they do definitely have an advocacy role, I find it interesting that I think people would accept that public funding of K-12 education is one of those things we value as a society because we don't want parents to feel like they can't educate their kids because they don't have the money. So clearly, I think we've been able to accept that when it comes to K-12 education. For post-secondary education, it's subsidized 75% by taxpayers. University students only pay about a third of the cost of their education. So we've also accepted that if universities are providing that role, that's also a way because we want to be able to broaden education to a greater number of people. So that's clearly a societal benefit. But why is it then that there's a barrier once we get into these organizations that have a clear bent? Fraser Institute has a clear bent. They are a free market advocacy or free market think tank. They look for free market solutions to public policy problems. And I would say organizations like the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives would identify themselves as almost the exact opposite. But that's, I think, where people get hung up on saying, is it legitimate for them to have charitable status? How would you argue that one?
And I think it's interesting that Centre for Policy Alternatives was founded in 1982 as a counter to the Fraser Institute. I think they should get it. I think we should be more lenient on what we consider to be charitable. I like the British system. Anything goes, but you have to be more accountable. Boards have to be more accountable. Everything has to be more accountable in England. In Germany, you actually have think tanks or political foundations directly connected to the political party, and not just one of them. There's usually many. I mean, the CDU had a think tank right in their building with several offshoots. The Linke, the left, which was made up of the former communists from both East and West Germany, have the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation, which is several blocks from their party headquarters. And you want to talk about party headquarters, just look at the news last night with the parties they were having at their headquarters with the election results coming in from regional elections. So they have them right there. And so I think we need to look at what charitable status is, whether it is education, what's going on with education, what do we mean by education, or should we just allow any organization to get charitable status? Why are we just going after saying that these think tanks can't because of what they do? Or more specifically, why do we say that think tanks have to be these nonpartisan organizations, which I think most people would say, well, no, they're not. These organizations are directly connected to a think tank. Why is it, you know, we all know that unions are directly connected, well, maybe indirectly connected through a bendy road to the NDP, but why is that okay, and why is it wrong for the Fraser Institute to be connected to the conservative movement within Canada? And I think if we look at it that way and look at the fairness across the board, we should say, no, let them all have their charitable status. Let them do their education and their advocacy, because in democracy, think tanks to come up with ideas to teach us about it. We need these groups to come up with different ideas and say this, you know, if the Fraser Institute comes up with a policy idea, and the Center for Policy Alternative comes up with the exact same idea. Let us read them. Let them digest them. Let us investigate and figure out which one we are more comfortable with. And why should the government start interfering because they don't like what one side says or the other?
Well, it's interesting what you have to say, because I want to talk to you more about that, because that is one of the weaknesses of political parties, is that they don't actually have in-house policy creation capability, because they just don't have the same amount of staff. I'm going to let you respond to this, but I am first going to hold that thought, Jeremy. I'm first going to take a quick break, and we've got some calls coming in and some comments coming in online. I will read those out as well. I'm speaking with Jeremy Hexton. We're talking about political think tanks, the amount of advocacy they do, whether or not they should have charitable status. Tell me what you think. We'll be back in a couple minutes on News Talk 770.
Making a living the old hard way.
Welcome back to Afternoons on News Talk 770. I did not expect this to be so polarizing, but of course every topic we do seems to be polarizing. And I'll give you a flavor of what you're saying. This from Calgary. We need think tanks, all sides. But then there's this comment. We should pull all those tax exemptions. Also, all the think tanks only want the views they agree with, because we only want our own inherent biases proposed to us. That's kind of the theme of the show today. I agree with you. I've got Charles on the line, and then I'll go to you, Jared, to be able to respond to that last discussion we had. But we'll go to Charles first. Charles, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just saying, I think that we should pull charitable status away from anything that is not of some sort of religious or some sort of social benefit. In other words, if you're helping a poor person on the street or the homeless or feeding people, I think you should have charitable status. But I think the free market should look after everyone else. And I don't even think public education should have charitable status, because once again, you've got such a diverse group of people that are feeding into a system. I think charitable status starts to, I mean, pretty soon everyone has charitable status, because you can argue everything's a benefit to society. And I just think that we've gone too far with it.
Don't you worry, though, that if you don't allow for charitable status for universities, for schools, for private schools, for think tanks, that you're just going to have an underinvestment in those areas?
No, because what happens is we've already got a bigger problem than that. If you look at education, and I have, and I've been involved in it for about 30 years now, what we do is, we continue to back students' loans. We continue to subsidize the education, and the price just keeps going up. You're not actually getting more investment from it because it's charitable. You've got the government involved. And when the government's involved in anything, it creates a problem, and then you try to put charitable status on top of it so you'll get more private investment. Let the market take care of itself.
Okay.
That's a far better job than any government.
Charles, thanks for your comments. What do you think? I don't think he would look at education at all as being a legitimate charitable means.
No, and then what do you say is social benefit? Anything can be social benefit. I mean, one of the things think tanks do, and this is a great definition that the Fraser Institute actually has, is they say think tanks conduct research on specific problems, encourage the discovery of solution to those problems, facilitate interaction among researchers, scientists, economics, and academics in the pursuit of those goals. A lot of that is good social benefit. I just want to make a comment to one thing we just said before the break. Barbara Yaffe wrote this fantastic article in November 3rd, 2011, where she basically said politicians, in other words, are preoccupied with getting themselves elected and maneuvering to stay in power and getting money. Ideally, think tanks do the legwork between elections in selling the political philosophies involved. And I think
She's absolutely right.
And that's why I think we think tanks and these groups should be more actively involved and should be connected to political parties instead of some of this maneuvering, saying they're not and wishy-washy around and having these 10% rules. And I think there should be that direct connection to allow think tanks to do some fantastic work, which they do.
So get rid of the veneer that one particular institute is not pushing a particular agenda that aligns with a political party, actually making that a little bit more transparent, but still allowing charitable status.
Yes.
All right, Chair. We'll see what our listeners have to say about that.
I opened up quite a can of worms today. I'm sure we'll be discussing this long, long down the road.
I'm sure we will. That was Jeremy Hexton, PhD student in the Department of Communications, a film and media at the University of Calgary. And as you can see, he's been studying up on think tanks. Got a few more comments to read out from you. But after the break, we are going to switch gears, talk about another contentious issue, the logistics a physician-assisted death in Alberta. They're trying to work it out. We'll be talking with Dr. James Silvius with Alberta Health Services. Do stay with us. We'll be back in a couple minutes on News Talk 770. Welcome back to Afternoons on News Talk 770. I've got a number of comments that have come in from you. I'll just read a couple of those out before going on to our next topic. I like this one. It says, think tanks help legitimize an argument. But if they're partisan, then it taints the discussion, regardless of which way they lean. They become social engineering vehicles for political entities that are trying to legitimize an issue. If they were nonpartisan, their findings could be published openly and evenly, and the best ideas could be put forth. Imagine if the NDP made a habit of implementing policies of the Fraser Institute, or the PCs listening to the Broadbent Institute. I kind of like to listen to both sides, but and I guess the thing is that there are different ways to approach the problems in government. You can either choose a big national program that is centrally planned, that hires union staff, and is set up as a monopoly. That tends to be the progressive way. And those tend to be the kind of solutions that you'd expect to see from the left-wing think tanks. The Fraser Institute would tend to believe that the best kind of solutions involve the free market or nonprofits, decentralized decision-making. And so just by definition, you are going to end up with different policy proposals based on the starting point of each of those organizations. But it's important to read from both sides. I mean, sometimes they come full circle and actually agree with each other. Like guaranteed minimum income has been promoted by those who are considered on the right, like Milton Friedman, as well as those who are on the left. So sometimes you actually can get think tanks coming to the same conclusion on different issues coming from a different perspective. But fact of the matter is, if all we had to rely on for the generation of ideas was universities or political parties, I don't know that we would be served very well. I like having the think tank world and the advocacy world as an interim, a way to get ideas on the table that then can either be picked up by political parties or not. That's my view on it. A few others of you think that they should all be losing their tax status, including we should be taxing religions, is what one person says, doesn't agree that churches should maintain their charitable status. That will be an issue for another day.